I'm Lieutenant Governor Austin Davis, and I just want to start by going around and having folks introduce themselves, and then we'll kind of get it started from there, and we'll start over here.
Hi, everybody. My name is Trevor Losh. I'm a graduate from the Benchmark program.
I'm Ayanda McGill, and I'm the Director of Programs here at Benchmark.
I'm Kevin McKeither. I'm the Program Manager of the Predisposition Program in our Gun Intervention Program.
Yeah. Good morning, everyone. I'm Alice Yoder, Lancaster County Commissioner.
Good morning, folks. State Rep Izzy Smith-Waddell, welcome to the 49th District.
Good morning, Deneen Sirachi, Mayor of the City of Lancaster.
Good morning, Todd Greger. I'm the Community Engagement Sergeant with the Lancaster City Bureau of Police.
Good morning, I'm Sherry Modine, the Director of Juvenile Probation.
And I'm Deanna Weaver, Program Director at Victim Witness Services in the Office of the District Attorney.
Well, thank you all for being here. The events of the last few weeks have made it clear that no one in America is free from the threat of gun violence. You and all of us deserve to be safe and feel safe in our community, whether you live in Lancaster City, in a rural part of Pennsylvania, in Philadelphia, everyone deserves that feeling of safety and security. You deserve to feel safe at home, walking in your neighborhood, or trying to leave an abusive relationship. That feeling of safety has been shattered for many, not just across Pennsylvania, but literally all across America. When I was a high school student in southwestern Pennsylvania nearly two decades ago, gun violence came to my neighborhood and shattered my sense of safety and community. Gun violence is the issue that brought me to public service all those years ago. It's spurred me to attend my first city council meeting and get involved in my local government. And now, as your lieutenant governor and the chairman of the Pennsylvania Commission on Crime and Delinquency, we're fighting to make our community safe from the epidemic of gun violence. I want to be clear, this is not just a Lancaster City problem. It's not just a Philadelphia problem. It's not just a Pittsburgh problem. This is a Pennsylvania problem, and it's uniquely an American problem, but it is a problem that we can and that we must do something about. Addressing the epidemic of gun violence requires a holistic and comprehensive approach, from supporting members of our law enforcement community, also making sure that we have community-based solutions, but we must also address the root causes of violence, like lack of opportunity, education, mental health challenges. We must continue to support victims and survivors to help them heal from their trauma and repair our communities. This new state budget, which Governor Shapiro signed into law last week, takes a comprehensive approach to make critical investments to help make our community safer. Our budget includes a $5 million increase for the Successful Violence Intervention and Prevention Grant Programs at PCCD. And this program supports a wide range of models focused on reducing community violence and relies on community groups that are most in tune with specific local needs. We got a $700,000 increase for additional staff at PCCD to administer the school safety and mental health programs and put that funding to work for our students and teachers here in Pennsylvania. A $5 million increase for the nonprofit Security Grant Fund at PCCD, which provides resources for places of worship, community centers, and other entities to equip themselves with security measures. And for the first time in our Commonwealth's history, we're investing in $11.5 million to create a statewide building opportunity through out-of-school time program, which will aim to reduce community violence by providing more after-school learning opportunities for young Pennsylvanians. This budget also supports victims of crime and protects victims of domestic violence. And this past budget the governor just signed, we secured $5 million for the Victims Compensation Assistance Program, which serves as a lifeline for victims and their families. Each year, this program receives, on average, 12,000 claims for eligible expenses, including medical and counseling expenses, lost earnings, loss of support, stolen cash, relocation, funeral, or crime scene cleanup, among others. Over the past 5 years, PCCD has paid more than 76,000 VCAP claims totaling $65 million in eligible expenses across Pennsylvania's 67 counties. This budget also increases for domestic violence services by an additional $2.5 million through our Department of Human Services. We've been making progress on the issue of gun violence here in Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania experienced the nation's second biggest decline in gun homicides last year. In 2024, Philadelphia has seen the most significant decline in gun violence per capita among the nation's biggest cities. Other cities like York and Erie are also seeing declines, but clearly there is much more work to do. The number one cause of death for young people in America is guns. It's not cancer, it's not car accidents, it's guns. We need to do more to keep our young people safe and help them make better choices. And while we often focus on interpersonal violence when we talk about guns, the majority of gun deaths in Pennsylvania are suicides. Gun suicides are more prevalent in rural communities in Pennsylvania. We need to make sure we're addressing that as well. Finally, we need to keep pushing for common sense gun safety measures like the laws that Representative Smith Waddell passed in the Pennsylvania House of Representatives a few months ago, like red flag laws, universal background checks, and a ban on bump stocks, Glock switches, and other devices that turn firearms into automatic weapons. The State House, as I mentioned, passed a number of these bills, but they haven't been considered in the State Senate yet, and I'm going to continue to push and urge my colleagues in the State Senate to take up these measures. It's my pleasure now to turn things over to someone who's a rising star in Harrisburg, and you all are lucky to have him representing you in the Pennsylvania House of Representatives, my friend, Representative Smith Waddell.
Thank you very much, Lieutenant Governor. Good morning, folks. I will endeavor to keep it brief. I just want to say I'm so excited to have the recognition of having the Lieutenant Governor as chair of the Pennsylvania Commission on Crime and Delinquency come here to the 49th District and particularly to the Benchmark program. I think all credit to the staff and young people of this program, which does really incredible work in our communities, as I'm sure they'll tell you. Like, you can see the gym, but it's not just that Benchmark brings together people who may have been on opposite sides of gun violence from one another, but they do mentoring programs in our communities, in the Youth Intervention Center, making sure that there is a seamless pipeline, keeping our kids out of trouble, off the streets, and pardon me, frankly, into out-of-school programs that are going to benefit them for their whole lives. If I'm not mistaken, the PCCD has invested a little bit over $600,000 into the Benchmark program. And I think that's a recognition of a simple fact. Wherever they are in the Commonwealth, our young people deserve to grow old. They deserve to have full lives without having them interrupted by gun violence. And it's why, as the Lieutenant Governor mentioned, not only do we support organizations like Benchmark, but we also work very hard with our partners like the city and the county of Lancaster to make sure that we have a legal framework that is protecting people, keeping violent guns off of our streets, and investing more in victims and investing more in preventing anyone from becoming the victim or perpetrator of a crime in the first place. So thank you. I appreciate a few moments.
So, thank you so much, Representative. And so we're just going to have some questions for the folks who are here on the panel, but everyone, feel free to jump in for anybody who might want to add anything. I really want this to be a free-flowing discussion, and I love these roundtables because I often learn a lot. They're better than doing like a stand-up press event, but I would love to start with the mayor. You're working hard to confront this problem every single day here, and I just want to know what's working, what's not working, and how can state government support your efforts here at the local level?
Thank you so much, Lieutenant Governor, and thank you to the Benchmark program for welcoming us all today. I'm in your corner and a big fan of the work that you're doing, and I'm just grateful for the relationships that you're building with young people across our community, so really, really appreciate that. I appreciate that we're having this conversation in Lancaster, and I always, as a mayor, want to preface that Lancaster is a very safe community. We are very fortunate to have not seen an uptick, even coming out of COVID, that other communities across the nation have seen. And I know that that is not something that is static. It can change at any moment. And I think that the things to your question, Lieutenant Governor, that make Lancaster unique in this regard is the partnerships that we have among our youth-serving organizations, including Benchmark, the School District of Lancaster, and the Lancaster City Police Bureau. And it is those relationships and the long-standing nature of our community and our strength of our neighborhoods that we understand and know and can identify very quickly the young people that are needing a little extra. And so how are we helping to support them? How are we providing pathways for them to make some different decisions, to engage differently with their school, with the guidance counselors that are available, as well as with our school resource officers, and ultimately with the community organizations that are here in the city. I also just say that we have an exceptional police bureau that is doing just an incredible amount of work to take illegal guns off the street. And that is definitely part of this conversation, is how do we stem the tide of illegal guns that are making their ways into hands of 15 and 16 and 17 year olds who have no business having a ghost gun or any other gun. And we have seen the tragedies of gun violence in our community. And I know that, you know, there is one particular young person whose life was cut short that I think about quite often, and what a difference it would make, just a split second decision to not go down that street at that particular time, to not have made the decision to even go out of their house that night. And this is how tenuous and fragile gun safety and gun violence is in our community. And our kids deserve more. Our officers deserve to be able to go out on the street and to not be taking in weapons that are illegal because they need to get home safely to their families as well. It is a scourge in our communities, and the lack of quite frankly, courage to address this is a blemish for our country. And so I appreciate that we're elevating this issue. I know that we have to just stay with it. Like, it's just constantly, you cannot ever let down, because there is always somebody there to sell a gun to a kid.
Thank you, Mayor. Just one quick follow-up. How does your office use data to address the problem of gun violence? And would having more robust real-time data be beneficial to you and your office?
So there's a couple of ways we use data, and I'm going to talk about a way that isn't related to crime first, and that is through our block strength indicator, and that's how we look at our blocks and the housing conditions and the quality of housing, the number of calls for service, the number of not just police calls but fire calls, complaints from residents about noise, trash, etc. We know that violence and the seeding of violence comes when there are not people that are really engaged in their neighborhoods, who are not looking out for their children that are living on their blocks. And so we use data to understand sort of where we need to put some more love and attention into those city blocks. The other way that we're using data is through the relationships that our school resource officers have with the young people. And, you know, Sergeant Greger can speak to this more than I can, but our police officers and our community, we know each other. And that is really important, because we can pick up the phone and say, hey, you know, this child is truant today. We know they're big brother, big sister at high school. We're going to have a conversation with them, and we're going to start addressing these things. So for us, quite honestly, the number of shootings that happens in the city are thankfully few and far between, generally speaking, I always have to like put in caveats because I know it can change at any moment. So for us, it's more about the relationships and really the antecedents to gun violence and making sure that we're connecting. And that's why the Benchmark program is so important, because the work that this team is doing to effectuate change that's pulling people out of the system before they get into the system even further is just incredible. It sets up the future for those young people to be successful.
Thank you. Commissioner, question for you. We talk a lot about the root causes of gun violence that lead to gun violence. What do you see as some of those root causes here in Lancaster County?
So thank you for that question. Again, thank you for hosting this Benchmarks amazing program. And if I can put a plug in, that I was really grateful that the ARPA fund from a county standpoint came to this program. That's so right. We were able to support this with the American Rescue Plan Act dollars, and really proud of that. So that first and foremost. But the root causes, I think you know a little bit about my background. I'm a nurse by background and also a hospital executive for over 35 years locally. And what I realized early on in my career is I thought I was getting into the healthcare business and realized that the hospitals are sick care, and what happens and what creates health happens in our communities and not necessarily in the hospital. So that's when I call it my journey upstream of really thinking about root causes of what creates health, well-being, and a really strong community. And it's how our communities relate to each other and how we set up systems as well as physical layouts of communities. So just by having people get to know their neighbors, and it sounds like something really simple, but really getting to the prevention side of things. I'm a big advocate for my grandmother, and maybe all of your grandmothers might have said, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. So I think we can look at the issue of gun violence as we have other issues in our community and think about it from a primary prevention standpoint. So not always spending a lot of money, because the prison costs a lot of money to have someone incarcerated. The work that we're doing at the YIC is also good to have a youth intervention center in our community, but they're also expensive. So I feel it's the right thing to do for individuals in terms of their health and well-being. But also, it's the financial way to look at things is on the prevention side, because we can invest money now that people might say you might not see the direct output of that, which means investing in after-school programs, and a lot of what you're suggesting is truly important. And then the work of Benchmark, and also allowing them, and I know one of their dreams is to be able to do more of what they're doing before an individual, a youth, ever really hits the youth intervention center or has some connection with the prison. So extremely important, and we've seen the difference. So really going upstream, and as a community, we're looking at things even in terms of safe housing. So do children feel like they have a safe home to go to? Because that kind of stabilizes all of us, that we're able to go to bed at night, sleep, have a good night's sleep to get up and either go to work or have relationships is so important. So the idea that we're now looking to a greater investment at the state level to be thinking about prevention is so important, and I've seen it work. So the work that Benchmark does, particularly, I think the mayor has alluded to this, along with what I know what the police do, is that they're on the streets building relationships and building trust, because we can't expect youth, particularly youth that have had a significant amount of trauma in their life, to be able to think about trusting someone right off the bat. So it takes some patience and kindness and really a deliberate program that really focuses on how do we build those relationships wherever they are. So I believe health happens in the community. It happens where we live, where we work and we play. And at this point, people are probably tired of hearing the live, work, and play. But how are we intentional in all those environments? There's one last thing I want to say is, I'm not giving a plug here, but an old book that I just love is From Front Porch to Back Deck. And basically it really talks about the importance of how we build our communities where we had front porches. So you have people sitting on the front porch, and when the kids come walking by, you know, and your neighbors know who they are. So, and that's a lot, again, what the mayor was referencing. That is not necessarily a program. It's probably an educational piece that we can do. I think we can do more about educating communities in that way, and how we build our communities matter. I said that was the last thing, but I have one more thing, so sorry about that. But the one other thing too around education, I do believe that there's an opportunity related to guns and gun violence around education for locking guns up and safety education around guns. As a former hospital administrator, I know that our primary care physicians and our pediatricians feel really passionate about that. The one thing I feel that we've struggled with that we need to do more is not only in the healthcare setting, but in any way that we're connecting, and I'm going to look at this from a county standpoint with our behavioral health, the BHDS, children and youth, and all the programs that we're responsible for, and even Office of Aging with some of the seniors, to ask the question, do you have guns in the home, and are they safe? Are they locked up? Are they put away so no youth can get them unintentionally, not meaning anything, and that's where bad stuff can happen.
You know, really just a quick follow-up. You know, the mayor talked about how potentially the state could be a better partner for Lancaster City, but from your perspective, can you talk a little bit about how you think the state, the Commonwealth, might be a better partner to county government here in Lancaster, but also counties across Commonwealth, maybe as we take on these issues?
Yeah, probably the first thing that always comes to my mind is the question you actually asked, the follow-up on the mayor, is around data.
Yeah.
So Lancaster County is the largest county in the state that does not have a local health department or some coordinated way to collect data in real time. And I'm talking, when I think about a health department, we're talking about modernization of a health department and what a local health department can do. And that big piece of that, because I was one of the key administrators through COVID and saw firsthand what it was like not to have real-time data. So it's real-time data potentially at the census tract versus a zip code. And I believe that very similar to what the mayor has developed within the city in terms of a system that we can overlay data points to tell the story, because one data point in time just tells you about what's happened at that point in time. But to have data points that show a trend and that can be compared to others that then truly tell the story, I think would be really important. And I think we can use some really good coordination at a state level.
You know, just taking off my lieutenant governor hat for a minute, I started my career in county government, and so putting that back on for a second. When I was in Allegheny County government, we created what was called County Stats, which is basically a nerve center for real-time data, and it goes across county departments, and so county manager and the county executive can really look at real-time data across their departments to drive their decision-making. So if you're looking for a model on how that's done at the county level, you should take a look at their model.
And I do understand that the state has just developed, I think it's almost a year, almost 2 years old, a data modernization department. Mm-hmm. So I've been in touch with them, and I don't know if that's a good connection to think about how we move forward with something related to this.
Perfect. Thank you. For Sergeant Granger, thanks for being here today, and thank you for your service. You know, police officers have a very tough job in keeping our community safe. What are some of the biggest challenges you think law enforcement officers are currently facing when it comes to the epidemic of gun violence in our communities?
So I would say that one of the largest things that's a problem that we're dealing with is getting cooperation from folks that have information. And that's why one of the things that the mayor had brought up about us building relationships and building trust is so important in our community. Because without those relationships and without that trust, folks don't feel comfortable coming forward and talking to us. And so trying to pour resources into some of those things to kind of change the culture a little bit is really important. Now, I may be a little partial to that because I am in community engagement, but I really do feel as though, you know, each one of our police officers is a community engagement officer. The relationships that they build out on the street, every call for service that they go to or respond to, every person that they talk to, that can be an opportunity to build that trust so that folks feel comfortable coming forward so that they can speak to us about some of these things that are taking place in their neighborhood.
Yeah, just without disclosing any sensitive information, could you share some of the best practices of how you are keeping firearms out of the hands of dangerous individuals for communities who may also be grappling with this issue?
Well, so it's actually interesting that you bring that up. It's one of the struggles that I'm currently having in community engagement. We previously have been able to provide gun locks for folks that come into the police station, but I haven't been able to find gun locks.
Really?
For a little while. And I've been working with Safe Kids Lancaster coordinator that has had the same problem. So I would say that would be a service that we could provide that would be very simple if we had that accessibility to those gun locks that we can just very readily give out.
Is it just like you just literally can't find a manufacturer?
I literally can't find them anywhere. I've talked to probably three or four different entities to try to obtain those gun locks by donation who have previously been able to do that, and they're just not available.
Thanks for flagging that. For Kevin and Ayanda from Benchmark, you received a VIP grant through PCCD, and I'm really grateful that we were able to get a $5 million increase in that funding for a total of $45 million this year. What services are you providing here, and what outcomes are you seeing from the work you guys are doing?
I want to say thank you again for that generous donation. In our predisposition program, we serve youth anywhere between like 13 and 18. They get gun charges and they're placed in YIC, which she referred to as our youth intervention center. Upon release, like a lot of these kids, you know, go around and they think they're tough or they want to be included, feel included, carrying these guns. They want to be part of a, you know, a group of guys and feel cool or whatever until they're placed or caught and charged with these, with a gun possession. And then they're sitting in this detention center, lonely, only got their mom or parents to support them. And upon release, we serve as mentors and supportive, and we're supportive to them. Upon release, we give them resources, such as taking them on trips like to colleges or getting them jobs, our employment rate. All of our kids that have been through the program have been employed. We also have direct contact with their probation officers, keeping them out of trouble, having them non-reoffending. Nobody reoffended in the program while being enrolled in our program. And it's just been a successful program as so far. You
want to piggyback? Yeah. So he talked about the predisposition. So the other program that we are implementing through the funding is the gun violence prevention program. So this program focuses on the kids who may have had some type of contact with the kids that were caught, but they weren't caught. So we're trying to get ahead of possible charges and provide the one-on-one mentoring for these kids so that they can understand that, yes, maybe your friend has been caught, or the you know, you may be looking at being caught. So before that, we're going to try to implement these services and see what the need is, because we found that majority of the people that are working with these guns or have these guns, there's another need. So whether it's a basic need, or they're looking for that family, or they're looking for friends or something that they need, and we try to attack that before it gets too far.
That makes sense. What, you know, how do you promote your program here in Lancaster? There's a lot of good programs that are going on around the Commonwealth, and sometimes I feel like making the connection for young people is difficult. So what do you guys do, and what tips would you give to others to best promote their programs in their respective communities?
So a lot of our work is based on like word of mouth. So when we first found out about Benchmark, like even before I was hired, I kind of just heard about like, oh my gosh, it's a gym. And both Kevin and I have athletic backgrounds, so it's easy to connect like the basketball or the working out and football for him. It's easy for us to connect those things to the kids. And then just showing up. We both have found that showing up for kids is so important. You may see my face one time and it's like, okay, you're from that program, but like whatever. And then you see me again in the courtroom and it's like, okay, maybe you do care. And then you see me again at, I don't know, a grocery store and you're like, hey, you know, do you remember me? So just that constant like reminder of like, I'm not going anywhere. I'm here to support you. You can either like take it or I'm still not gonna go anywhere is really big for them, and they really appreciate it. For other programs, I think that's the biggest thing. For our service model, we don't stop. So we don't have a time frame where it's like, okay, you finish the program after 6 months and then we just go away and you never hear from us.
our door is always open. We like to say that we have like a revolving door. We have kids who we have maybe served back in 2020. They'll just walk through the door any day now, and we're not like, oh no, we don't have a referral for you, or we don't know where you've been in the last 4 years. We are like, what can we do to help you now? So that's like one of the biggest things that we strive to make sure that kids understand, is that we are always here for them. And no matter what point in your life, you could be back at the top or you can be back at your lowest point, we're here and we're always willing to help you.
You know, I think you hit on a topic that's so important, particularly for young people. It's consistency. And so many young people sometimes don't get that consistency at home. So that just proves a point how important programs are like this, that somebody is consistently in their lives saying that I care about you, I want to pour into you. And I was one of the young people that benefited from a program like that. So thank you for all the work that you guys are doing here. For Trevor, just a question for you. You went through the Benchmark program. Can you tell us how it helped you?
It helped me a lot, because when I came home, not a lot of people I had in my circle, and everybody was telling me I had to change up my circle, but the people at Benchmark just showed me and made me believe that I can do better, because they knew that I could do better, so I know I could do better. And that showed me like that I can change, like I'm not gonna just try to go back in trouble. And they would help me every day. Like once I came home, the mentorship program, we would hang out like every day, talk every day, go get food, go to arcades, and just talk like a real actual conversation. Like, yes, it was with the Benchmark people, but it wasn't always just a bit about the Benchmark stuff. It was about my real life. Like, how are you feeling? What are you actually going through? You know what I'm saying? Stuff like that. And even like after this, me and Miss Yana about to go get some food. We about to catch up because I haven't talked to her in a little bit. But a big thing was the mentoring, and like just knowing that these people actually want me to do good and they know I can do good.
Thank you. You know, I think the voice of young people in Pennsylvania is so critically important. I got my start in public service as a young person. I'd love to ask you, for us as government leaders around the table, what can we do to be more supportive of young people like you and all across Pennsylvania?
Just be there. Even when it feels like we don't want y'all to be there, just still be there. Do what y'all gotta do, you know what I'm saying?
Piggyback off of that, that's true. I remember like being in his position, and I have never even like been around people at the status of you guys. So it's cool that you are willing to come and sit down and like learn about our kids and learn about the things and actually like write down things and try to figure out how we can support them as much as possible. So I think for him especially, to seeing him grow as an individual, he probably a couple months ago would have said no to coming and sitting with you guys. So it's awesome that he feels comfortable enough to do this, and I think that's very important.
Thank you. Thank you so much for being here. Sherry, I have a question for you. What are you seeing when it comes to young people and gun violence, particularly from a juvenile probation standpoint? And what can we be doing to help young people get back on the right track?
Well, I think, you know, and probably Kevin and Ayanna could answer this even better. I mean, we're seeing a lot of kids that are carrying guns, not just because it looks cool, but for protection. They're scared. A lot of our kids that are carrying guns have been victims of gun violence themselves or have witnessed it. So providing funding for programs such as Benchmark, and we have other community-based programs that are you know, really good. Is we need a variety, because not every kid fits each program. So that's the wonderful part of Lancaster County. We do have a variety. But Benchmark in particular, without this program, kids' lives would look really different. I'm not telling Trevor's story, but I will tell you, had this program didn't exist, Trevor would have gone away to a placement, no doubt. We wouldn't have had any other options. And he has just, I mean, I'm so proud of him. He needs to be hired by somebody to be the youth voice, be on the, you know, youth council, because listening to these kids are so important. They'll tell you what you need to hear. Not right away. You have to build those trusts. That's why we depend on these programs, because they make bonds with these kids. I feel like our probation officers make pretty good relationships with the kids, but when they're in these programs, it's a different level. And we have to remember too that we need to continue to grow these programs, which of course comes back to funding, promoting these types of jobs, because the people that work in these jobs aren't necessarily here for a paycheck, but they do have bills to pay. So, you know, having those resources are really, really important, and, you know, being able to continue to support, you know, the wills and that are those people that are willing to start up these programs, to grow them, to go after this funding is really important.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, go ahead.
So, Sherry, I think it's what I've seen from even before I was in this role over the past 10 years. If you can talk a little bit about CIT training and the work you've done around trauma-informed. I think 10 years ago that wasn't happening in terms of your employees, your staff, and the relationship that you would have with the kids.
Right. Well, and I will say our whole entire court now has been trauma-informed. We've all gone through that training, but it's really important when you're working with kids, because most of them are, we're seeing kids with significant trauma, and being able to know how to approach them. All of our programs now are that we work with are trauma-informed, because our kids, we're seeing kids with mental health like we've never seen before. It really, you know, you hear it all the time, but it is a mental health crisis. These kids are really hurting, and they're not trusting. So we really need the opportunity to be able to work with them. Kids are going to continue to make mistakes. You know, we all know the brain development. And not reacting to those first mistakes, being able to give them time to learn and grow. And that's where programs like this come into place, because they're consistent, they stay with them. They're like, okay, let's acknowledge the mistake, this behavior, let's put in some type of a consequence, but that doesn't mean that it's over and you go away, you know, and that's how we deal with it. And I think that's important. But the trauma-informed has been something that has been embraced, I believe, in Lancaster County. A lot of your efforts getting that started has been very beneficial here.
Yeah, and if the one thing I could add is, I think, you know, we hear a lot more about trauma-informed now than we have years ago, but I think you've taken it to the next level, and a good example on the systems that need to change within a department or an mm-hmm. area. So you can go to a class, be educated, and say, okay, I think I got this. But then to reflect on the processes and systems of how you operate on a day-to-day basis to implement that trauma-informed practice, it takes time, it takes effort, but I think that's unique and makes a difference in making those connections, and you probably have the same experience.
Just to jump back to you, do you have anything you want to add between the connection between young people and gun violence and what you're seeing? Because I feel like you might have some really good insight.
A lot of these kids make these mistakes, and then they just get thrown to the side. And I think what we do is we serve as, like, we're still supportive for you. We're still here for you. Like I was saying, these kids get locked up and they're left alone. They're in uncharted waters. They don't know what's next. So upon release, as soon as they get released, we're right there supporting them, keeping them out of trouble until their actual court date or sentencing or whatever the judge may decide. And we're just there supporting, so that whenever the tough times do come, they know that they got us to fall on. Even the ones that are very few that do reoffend, we're still there for them and building these relationships. And upon graduating our program, we're still there supporting, even long term. They could call us, we're one call away, and we're just going to be there to be supportive at all costs. You know, like, they know that they could come here, our door's always open for them. We got a bunch of mentors that are from the community, so they have like a background that they can relate to. You know, these aren't just guys, like Sherry said, just showing up for a check. You know, like, this is work that I don't even consider it work, which a lot of our mentors don't. You know, we come in here willing to work with these kids. You know, these kids are coming from different backgrounds. Like, we don't know what they did. And at the end of the day, they're kids.
Right.
You know what I mean? A lot of them get just tossed to the side, or we don't even, like, when I get cases, I don't even look at what the findings of your of your case is. I want to get to know you personally, build that rapport, and take it from there. And we just work with these individuals and try to keep them out of trouble as much as we can.
Yeah, just to piggyback, we do use the fact that we're from the city, so both him and I are from here, so it's easy to connect. I was raised in the middle of the city, so I can't say that every single experience that the kids have experienced, I have experienced, but I am impacted a lot by some of the things that happen in the community. I always use Trevor as my talking person because the relationship that him and I have, I would have never thought happened. When he was in the holding cell, I was the first person that he saw, and I just remember looking into his eyes, and he was just like, "Why? Like, who are you? You're just another program." And now, like he said, we're gonna go get food after. When I was out for some time for maternity leave, he was the person that was checking up on me. Not saying that anyone else was, but I was getting texts from him like, "Hey, I'm in your office, you're not here. When are you coming back?" So it's deeper than just, "I'm coming here to get my paycheck." Like, we genuinely care about these kids and care about our community and how we are gonna see our community grow as community members.
Speaking of which, one of our kids had a child while in the program, it's the father of the child, but they had a, I was invited to the baby shower. We fill up refrigerators with food sometimes if need be, got stuff for the baby. He still sends me pictures to this day. And he's graduated the program like 4 months ago or so, but he hasn't reoffended. He's doing great. And just building these relationships that's going to last a long time, just knowing that you got us in your corner. And like I said, our doors are always open. Our open gym has great, great mentors that run the program. So they're always welcoming to come in here, work out, whether it be filling out a job application. We got printing and design and t-shirts, logos that we're working on. We offer cooking classes and the women's empowerment groups. So the list goes on, but yeah, we're ultimately here for the kids and, for the long run.
Thank you.
They've really created a community here where kids know they have a place to come, and they come whether they're court ordered or not, which is amazing.
Thank you. Thank you guys for all the great work. Sherry, just last follow-up, what advice would you give? You know, I'm a new parent, and I recognize that managing families is hard, and I'm sure as we get older, my daughter gets older, we'll deal with different challenges. But, what advice would you give for, a parent who maybe is trying, recognizes their child might be going down a wrong path, but maybe, struggling to figure out what to do to put them back on the right path? Is there any advice that you might have?
Keep them in your house. No, I wish I had that. I'm a parent too. I have, two young adults now. And that's a very difficult thing. I mean, the biggest thing that I've learned through sitting with kids and talking to them is having that ability to listen to your child, not thinking about what can I do, but listening to what they need and reaching out to resources. I mean, everybody, their go-to is to go to law enforcement or to go to, juvenile probation, but our communities have resources, whether it's, through a guidance counselor or through a community agency that offers some type of counseling, really leaning on those and being open to not just being with your child, but within your child's community, their environment, really getting to know their friends. And it's the hardest part is to stop your brain from trying to figure out how can I fix this, to really listening to what's going on and what your child needs. But I'm no expert, but that's just what I've learned over my 30 plus years in the field. So
well, thank you so much for all your work in that field. It's truly making a huge impact. My question is for Deanna. Thank you for being here as well. Your team sees the impact of gun violence on individuals, communities, and families. And what are some of the biggest barriers that victims of gun violence face from your perspective? And how do you help address those challenges?
Sure. Well, I appreciate you having us. Thanks for hosting. I'm so admiring this program. And I have a few things that are tangible, and then there's some intangibles, I think. The basics that are lacking sometimes are relocation. If it's not domestic violence, there are very few places. If, say, you were shot, maybe in your neighborhood, maybe outside your house, suddenly, where do you go? And VCAP is a fantastic resource that we avail of, you know, we avail ourselves of that. And I'm so thankful that you helped to get the additional money into the fund. But it's not, first of all, it's not upfront money. And relocation, right now, the limit is $1,000. Well, that doesn't go very far. PCCD is always examining how can we make it better. So the money to allow those improvements is really important. Mental health services as well, for the crisis, for the trauma, there are waiting lists. You know, people, when they're, and sometimes it takes people a while to be ready to go to counseling. When they're ready, they need to be able to get in somewhere. And there need to be trauma-informed therapists everywhere for everyone. You know, we talk a lot over the last number of years about reentry for offenders in the juvenile and adult system. I wholeheartedly support that. But what I would like to see is reentry for victims. Your life is turned upside down. In some of these cases, especially in the more serious cases where it's life-altering, either you can't function physically the way you used to, emotionally, maybe you've been unhoused because of it, or maybe you have now a need to have someone just right there with you all the time because of the emotional trauma. You know, there's just, we do what we can do. Our victim advocates walk people through the system. We link them up with community resources as soon as we can. So a lot of referrals, we file victims compensation. We work with our partner agencies, depending on what the crime is. But it's just, a lot, there are times when it's not enough in the more serious cases. So just making sure that funding is there all the time and that we have enough resources in the community would really help. We're very fortunate in our community that we always have the support of our commissioners. Not every county has that, so that they pick up the difference. You know, they make sure that there's money in our county budget beyond our grant funding. If we didn't have that, I wouldn't really want to be the director of the program. It would be a little scary. But we can always do more. And, you know, they need protection. So especially, like I said, if it's not domestic violence where they can go to a shelter or sexual assault, you know, there's only so much that we can do for them. So there's the reentry, I mean, the relocation and things like that. That's why it's so important. And then the intangible that I think would benefit all of us is the attitude. Sometimes there's a stigma. The community is wrong in making certain victims worthy of our compassion and others not. And as community leaders and as people that live and work here, we need to get rid of that somehow. You know, when certain crimes happen, everyone cares. But the day-to-day and the other crimes, people just, it's in the paper and then it's gone and no one cares. And sometimes those are the crimes we could do the most about. Until we decide that every victim is worthy of care, you know, I don't think we're gonna get too far. You can hear it in their voices sometimes. A family member who was killed maybe because they were shot, but they may have been involved in some other activity. And you hear people, and you just wanna stop them and say, you don't have to justify your child to me. They were your child. Everyone needs to adopt that. And I think until we finally get there, everything we do is not gonna be enough. So that's the intangible that I think some victims, there's a barrier there, because there's like this stigma, well, if you hadn't, you know, we can't have victim blaming, you know, and the children are watching. And I think that attitude contributes to the cycle, because then they're like, well, see, you don't really care about my mom, or you don't really care about the people that live in my neighborhood. So I'm gonna go with people that do care about me. So I think it all ties together in that respect. But I really wish we had 10 more programs like this in our community alone. So I thank you for having the discussion. And we just need to, I think, talk about it more. Like, services are available. We've gone a long way. PCCD has gone a long way to increasing our visibility. And we really appreciate all the efforts that you've made. So thank you.
Thank you so much. You touched on it briefly in your comments about the Victims Compensation Fund. Mm-hmm. Can you just explain a little bit about how that fund helps those directly for folks who may not be aware of that program? And thanks for recognizing the work that we did to get more resources there.
Sure. It's one of my favorite things to do. Victims Compensation is a fund available for people for things like medical expenses, funeral, counseling, relocation, loss of earnings, loss of support if someone is killed and they were the main support in the family. And we file these claims. Now, they're a payer of last resort. So if you have insurance, you have to use that first. But as we know, that usually falls short. People have big deductibles, they have co-pays. It'll pay even for expenses of getting to counseling, mileage, and things like that. So it's something that helps keep them, get them back on their feet, and hopefully before the bills start going to the creditors and before they're facing eviction. So we just want to get in there and file those claims as soon as we can, because it's not an immediate thing, but it is a wonderful resource. Every state has some version of this, and Pennsylvania has probably one of the best.
Can I just add to that? Isn't that an issue, though, that it's applied to, that it is connected with insurance? Because the commercial insurance and who holds the insurance for the family is an issue in terms of, and I know from the Children's Alliance, the Child Advocacy Center here, it is an exception there for that you don't have to go to the insurance, because if the insurance is owned by the potential perpetrator then that's like a loophole that I don't know what you were talking about. If it's not covered there, that's something to consider.
Mm-hmm. Right. Now, they no longer have to go through the insurance if it's a case of child abuse or sexual assault where the offender holds the insurance, then you do not have to go through your insurance.
Correct. Is wonderful.
Yes. Yep. And you can also use out-of-network people. So for counseling, in some communities, there's very limited counseling and there's limited coverage. And so you can get an exception for that, too. Yeah. They've done so much work over the last 30 years as I've been doing this that to make room for those necessary exceptions. And they're always looking at that. Yeah.
Mary, do you want to add something?
Yeah, just one of the things that I have learned being mayor is that people are not one thing. And I'm just going to say that again. People are not one thing. And I have sat with moms who've lost children and have had that same experience. You do not need to justify that your child was your child, that you love that person. And do not need to have you say that my child is a good person if they were picked up with a gun or whatever, because I do believe in the inherent worth of people and that people deserve to have second chances and they need to be accountable for their actions as well. And just the way that, you know, we seem to live in a culture that reduces people to a rap sheet or to a uniform or to a political party or, you know, fill in the blank. We are really expert at doing this. And I think as a community, the more, and just to echo your words, the more that we can just remember that people are more than one thing. These are sons and daughters. These are loved ones. These are people who made a bad decision. And is that decision going to direct the rest of their life? Or are we going to provide a space and opportunity for them to show up in a different way? And I'm always looking for ways and the moments that people are going to show up differently, because that's when they're ready. And that's what Benchmark is. People walk through these doors. Sometimes they're ready. Sometimes they're not. But just the act of walking through the door is often an indication that they're ready for something different and they're ready to show up in a different way. And I appreciate that there is space that's here, physical space, but also just the emotional space to have that conversation. So I just want to add that, because as a mayor, you know, it's hard, you know, because, you know, we don't adjudicate, but obviously, I'm overseeing our police department. We're making arrests. We're holding people accountable for breaking the law. And we also know that people are more than one thing.
Yeah. Thank you so much. Thank you all to the participants. Would love to give Representative Smith-Waddell, if you want to make any closing comments, or the mayor or commissioner, if you have anything that you want to close on.
I'll just
Deanna, am I pronouncing your name right?
Yes.
What you said is one of the most insightful and compassionate things I have ever heard. And I really appreciate you taking the time to say that. I'm just floored by everything that I've heard today, and in particular by you, Trevor. And I know it sometimes can be hard to like sit in front of a bunch of cameras and watch like listen to people say positive things about you. But I think the thing that I'd want to close with, not a lot of people know this, Lieutenant Governor, at 11 years old, I was a justice involved youth. I think, to the mayor's point, had people decided that closed the book on me, we wouldn't be sitting here having this conversation now. And the thing about programs like Benchmark, and indeed about your work as chair of PCCD, is that it gives our young people an opportunity to be who they are when their community invests in them. And that, I think, makes all the difference. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Commissioner.
Yeah, this was phenomenal. So thank you so much for convening us to get together and have this conversation. I think it's great. And I'm so excited that we're looking upstream in terms of issues and focusing on prevention. So thank you.
Thank you. Mayor, anything you want to close up? Well, you know, thank you all so much for joining here. You guys are doing tremendous work here in Lancaster, and I'm so glad that we could come here to highlight it. But the one thing I want to leave you all with is I want you to know that you will always have a partner in the governor and I as long as we're serving in these roles. And, you know, really making sure that Pennsylvanians have the opportunity to be safe and feel safe in their communities is something that we truly believe in. It's something we are dedicated to, and it's something that we're going to continue to deliver on. And so I want to thank you all for the work that you all are doing and that you're going to continue to do. And you have my commitment from PCCD. We're going to continue to work to be better, to continue to make sure we have the resources that you all need to continue to operate programs like this and to make our community safe. So thank you all for being here today and for taking some time.
Thank you.
Thank you.